You're listening to the David Knight Show. Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Wednesday, December the 18th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host today. Are they going to vote on impeachment? Certainly looks like it. Or maybe they will delay the final vote so they can get it right on the anniversary of Bill Clinton's impeachment. We'll wait and see, but I haven't talked a great deal since I've been back about the details of this. I think it's more important to see the larger image, the context, the historical context of what is happening. Yes, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the details, but I think the real issue here is that this country is headed to civil war. And this is not about Trump. It's not coming about the Democrats. This is something that has been in the works. It is a natural cycle. I've been saying this since I came to InfoWars. I'm going to remind you today, I'm going to play the report, 2013. Ever since I've been here at InfoWars, I've been talking about the coming 2030 agenda, the society that they hope to establish after they have destroyed the current society, and they're pulling it apart. And they've been preparing for a revolution, a civil war. The establishment of these people who now control our free speech and our free press, they were put in position to do that because they knew this was coming. All this stuff about climate change, that is not. There's going to be a big change in climate, a big change in political, economic, social climate that's going to be coming. And so we're going to talk about this. Pat Buchanan is saying we have secession fever. Is it ever going to end? Yeah, it will. It will for a while. It will end sometime a little bit before 2030. Strauss and Howe wrote a book on it, the same people who gave us the term millennial. You know, they have a generational view of history. I believe they're right. So I'm going to play that report for you today, but we're going to put this in the context of what's going on with impeachment, the context of what's going on in Virginia with the Democrats and gun control. That is the larger context of this. You know, from the work that I did at Fort AP Hill, we went into the Asymmetric Warfare Center. Going back to the report in 2013, where you had one of the West Point instructors put out that war scenario about how there were some people in, I think it was Darlington, South Carolina. I'm just going from memory now. But what I remember about it, which was so bizarre and strange, I remember Alex and I were saying, how ridiculous is this that they would say these people in South Carolina, and I think what triggered it might have been gun control. I can't remember the details of it. I should have looked it up this morning. But the salient part of this, folks, is that in their war game scenario, as ridiculous as it sounded in 2013, their scenario was that the people in South Carolina who wanted to secede from the U.S. allied themselves with, wait for it, Russia. Now, we're all looking at this and scratching our heads and like, are these guys off the wall here? Why would they do that? Now, since then, we have had 3 years, since the election and since Hillary Clinton began this. We've had 3 years of anybody who is an enemy of the establishment is with Russia, 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 Russia. So it doesn't even look strange anymore. See how they moved the Overton window there? Except they were planning that narrative back in 2013. There was no basis for it then, but they have now made that essentially a military-industrial complex meme, haven't they? And so we're going to talk about their plans, what they're doing. We also have going to take a quick look at President Trump's impeachment letter to Nancy Pelosi. Look, this is a cycle in history. You know, we've only had two presidents impeached, Andrew Johnson after the first Civil War. A lot of corruption there. Bill Clinton. But then we've had an attempt to take out Nixon. He resigned before they did it. We've had the last three presidents. They've had movements within Congress to impeach them. George W. Bush, Obama, and now President Trump. It looks like they're going to do it with President Trump. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Wednesday, December the 18th, year of our Lord, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host, and today it looks like we're going to have a vote that they've been talking about for quite some time. President Trump fired off an angry letter to Nancy Pelosi. Among other things, he said, "You have cheapened the importance of the very ugly word impeachment." And again, when you look at the historical precedents of this, when you look at the Drudge Report, you see the picture of Andrew Johnson. You see the picture of Bill Clinton and so forth. And then there's a picture of President Trump or whatever. There's only two presidents who have actually gone through and done the impeachment. But they were about to do it with Nixon. He resigned before they actually did it. But just understand that, you know, he had Clinton actually impeached the next president, George W. Bush. There was talk about impeachment. There were many people in Congress who were talking about impeaching him. There are many people who are talking about impeaching Obama. I suggested that, quite frankly. I think George W. Bush should have been impeached for the Patriot Act. So I agree with both of those, but it didn't happen. But it shows that there is a major pushback and a major division. We have essentially two groups of people. One that essentially holds to the principles this country was founded on, and another group that seeks to overturn those principles in every way possible. These are irreconcilable, and it will result in something very nasty coming down the road. We can look at what's going on in the UK with Brexit, for example. As Brexit has succeeded, immediately the Scottish National Party, which essentially got a unanimous vote in Scotland, says, well, we want our independence. They've talked about this several times. I support Scottish independence. I support the right of anybody for self-government, just like I support Catalonia. Look, Scotland, Catalonia, they're left-wing socialists. They want to be part of the European Union. They just don't want to be affiliated with, in the case of Scotland, with Great Britain. In the case of Catalonia, they don't want to be affiliated with Spain. They somehow think it's going to be better for them to be directly under the EU. Yeah, they're nuts, but, you know, hey, that's their right. And quite frankly, when you look at it, my very first program, I had people on from California who were left-wingers who wanted to secede because of President Trump and other issues. And I encourage them in that. Yes, please, go your own way. Good luck to you. I don't want to force somebody into a political union against their will. I believe in principles of self-government, and I believe that we're all better off if we don't have people like those in the left-wing radical areas of California. I support those people on the right in California who would like to have their own independent state, or the people in Oregon and Washington who would like to have their own independent state because they're tired of being dominated by urban liberals. So I support self-government. But typically, it doesn't go peacefully. It can. You know, we had the situation with our own Civil War when Virginia seceded. West Virginia said, well, we don't want to do that. We want to stay. And Virginia said, okay. Yeah, we agree in the principle of secession, so yeah, you can have the state of West Virginia. And it was recognized by both the Confederacy and by the Union, and it remained a state after the Civil War. When you had Ukraine, which had been part of the Russian Empire since Catherine the Great, they'd been part of Russia for longer than America had been an independent nation. When Ukraine seceded, the Crimea, which was a part of Ukraine, said, we want to stay with Russia. And then you see the United States and NATO and others say, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. There's double standards, aren't there? We've seen Scandinavia. Scandinavian countries, Denmark, Norway, Finland, Sweden, they have come together. They've separated. They've merged. They've separated. They've come together in different combinations or peacefully done that many times. Czechoslovakia split up. The Czech Republic, Slovakia now, but it used to be Czechoslovakia. So it can be peaceful, but it typically is not peaceful. And so when you look at Brexit and you have Boris Johnson saying, absolutely not, you guys cannot leave. It's like, what gives you that right? And wouldn't you rather have these radical pro-EU socialist and globalist go their own way so that you can have more of a say over your own society? I think that is absolutely true. But when we get back to this impeachment situation, this is a part of a coming trend. We'll talk about this a little bit more coming up. But let's focus on some of the immediate details that are happening right here now. And then in the next segment, we're going to pull this back into a bit more of a context. As the letter to President Trump, we've got an article up on Infowars.com by Michael Snyder. Trump said, what? Here are the 10 zingers in President Trump's historic letter to Nancy Pelosi. Number one, he says this impeachment represents an unprecedented, unconstitutional abuse of power by Democrat lawmakers, unequal in nearly 2.5 centuries of American legislative history. That's true, but as I just pointed out, this is a trend, and there is a broader context that needs to be seen in this. By both Democrats and Republicans, especially if we're going to pull this back and not have a violent war. Number two, he says, by proceeding with your invalid impeachment, you're violating your oaths of office, you're breaking your allegiance to the Constitution, and you're declaring open war on American democracy. Skip down to four. You know full well that Vice President Biden used his office and $1 billion of U.S. aid money to coerce Ukraine into firing the prosecutor who was digging into the company, paying his son millions of dollars. Yes, we know, because we saw the videotape. There's no denying this. Only the worst partisan Democrat hacks will go on TV and deny that. And I've seen many of them, as you have as well. He says, now you're trying to impeach me by falsely accusing me of doing what Joe Biden has admitted he actually did. And he admitted it on videotape, I'll add. And that is the key. That's number five out of the 10 points that Michael Snyder pulled out of the letter. And that is the central point. They're trying to impeach President Trump by falsely accusing him of doing what Joe Biden did. And quite frankly, what Joe Biden did, it's even worse than that. President Trump didn't get to it. So what Joe Biden did was he threatened these people by saying, I'm going to withdraw aid unless you do me a personal favor. Now, even if, and this is part of Rudy Giuliani's, people are saying, well, his new strategy might be, well, what if he did? What if President Trump did? You know, Rudy Giuliani spent some time in the Ukraine. He came back gleeful about what he found, because I think he found that there's far, far more corruption and connection to the Democrats than people have been talking about. I've been talking about far more corruption than the establishment press has been talking about. I covered it 2 years ago. I don't even think it's news anymore. And, you know, they're not going to pay attention 2 years ago. They're not going to pay attention now. But perhaps Rudy will bring that out. But part of that is that if President Trump were going to withhold aid from them, it isn't for his own personal financial gain, as Biden did. It is to expose corruption, which is his duty to do. And if that corruption is conducted by somebody who is a political opponent and it benefits him personally, then so be it. So be it. Rudy is right to say that. So be it. Look at this vast corruption. You're telling me that we're not allowed to investigate that? And he goes on to say, any member of Congress who votes in support of impeachment is showing how deeply they revile the voters, how truly they detest America's constitutional order. Oh, yes, quite frankly, the Constitution, the Electoral College, is as much their enemy as President Trump is. They despise the Constitution. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Second Amendment. We're going to talk about Fourth Turning. We'll be right back. Stay with us. right. There is a time for everything under heaven, and we have seasons. We have revolving seasons. That is the premise of Strauss and Howe. I think it's true. I think that we do have cycles, and I think we are in the latter stages of a very, very important cycle. You know, we have an article from Mike Adams, Natural News, 10 self-evident truths that we the people have spontaneously come to realize. And Mike says, you know, Trump has caused the corrupt, fraudulent, lying specter of big government to fully reveal itself for what it truly is. I agree with that. You know, Trump hasn't gone through and in a didactic way explained what's wrong with government. I try to do that. But, you know, the best way to do it is to just express the values of traditional Americans and the values of the people who voted for President Trump and just watch these people react to that. They absolutely hate it. It's kind of akin to that meeting that I went to, I've talked about before, where as Hillary Clinton was trying to take over health care, I went to speak out against it. It was a Democrat audience because it was a Democrat congressional district that I lived in. And when I got up and said, well, you know, what you're talking about doing is better done by charity. Charity by individuals and charity. Yeah, I was cut off. Democrats didn't want to hear the word charity. I was booed. You know, charity. We got an entitlement. You know, kind of like AOC. It's not free stuff. It's public goods. Your stuff belongs to me. Yeah, you just get them to expose themselves. I don't have to come out and say, you're communists. All you do is you just talk about basic American values and the Christian foundation of America. And these people reveal themselves for what they are. And that's basically what President Trump has done. We wanted somebody who was outside of the establishment. Why? Because you and I want to get out of the establishment. We want out. I want out. I want to cut off Washington. That's why I don't spend so much time talking about Washington. They're hopeless. Look at this impeachment circus that's going on. It's ridiculous on both sides. I want to cut these people out of my life, and we're going to do that at the local level, or we're going to become slaves. It's just that simple. And so all President Trump had to do was just to come in and talk about, you know, his basic ideas about America, traditional ideas about America, talk about the things that we had voted for, and these people would reveal themselves for what they truly are. And I was hoping that President Trump would be a wrecking ball. He hasn't been explicit enough as a wrecking ball. You know, he hasn't come in and he hasn't stopped the foreign wars. He hasn't stopped the censorship that began under his regime, right? He's basically now cozying up to these Silicon Valley censors, defending them, as you've got various European countries and Macron trying to make them at least pay taxes. That's all they want. Just, okay, you can dominate people and you know, be our surrogates and so on, but we want you to pay some taxes. No, no, no. We don't even want them to pay taxes, says Trump. He won't do anything to stop internet censorship. So I'm very disappointed that he hasn't explicitly opposed these people, that he hasn't led from principles, but his mere presence there is enough. His mere presence has been a wrecking ball. And so from that standpoint, he's not disappointed me at all. I wanted President Trump to be a wrecking ball. All he has to do is just show up. All he has to do is just opine on Twitter about what's wrong with these people. And it causes them to the establishment to attack him. And it shows their corruption better than we could ever explain it, doesn't it? And that's what we're going to be witnessing today. And so Mike Adams puts it in here. He says, number one, we don't believe you. Number two, you're all dishonest crooks. You should never be trusted again. Number three, the intelligence community is the enemy of the people and must be dismantled if any American is ever to truly be free. That's absolutely true. We are not going to voluntarily hand over our guns. You may come and try to take them by force, but we will shoot you if you try. We are withdrawing our consent. You are now a rogue enemy government that we finally recognize as the enemy. We are never going to vote for establishment candidates again. We will not live as slaves. We will not suffer under your tyranny. We would rather die as Americans, defending our liberty and our republic. If we ever get the chance, we will arrest all of you and throw you in prison for as long as you live. We will no longer cooperate with your sham court system, your corrupt FBI, your lawless federal regulators. They're all fraudulent criminal cartels that have no legitimate authority. You have lost the consent of the quote-unquote governed. Your fiat currency financial system, your debt Ponzi scheme is a criminal fraud that steals money from the working class, and we will no longer hold your dollars, and we will seek alternatives at every opportunity. You know, 92% of Americans reports a poll that was conducted by Harris at the end of November. 92% of Americans feel that their freedom is threatened. And they asked, what specific freedom is being threatened the most? Number one, freedom of speech. This was not even an issue when President Trump became president. We elected President Trump to stop the wars and to protect our borders, first and foremost. And we knew this was going to come. You know, Matt Drudge came here, fall of 2015, and said, oh, by the way, I've been told by a certain Supreme Court justice, you know, the guy later wound up being found dead with a pillow over his head, that you guys are going to be taken down, especially if Hillary Clinton wins. Well, you know, we were taken down anyway because they proceeded with their claims, and you were taken down as well. So it's not just the free press. It's your free speech that was taken down. And again, President Trump is trying to make allies with the people in Silicon Valley. They are so aggressive, just like with the Second Amendment, because that's number two. 48% said the freedom that is most threatened is freedom of speech. 37% said freedom of expression. 35% said freedom of religion. Those three things right there are the First Amendment. I'm telling you, the First Amendment is under attack, more so even than the Second Amendment. But the Second Amendment is where the fireworks are going to start. And it's right after freedom of speech, right to keep and bear arms. And then, of course, in the middle of all that, at 41%, the right to equal justice. We got a rigged court system. And you can see that in this impeachment process, can't you? I've been talking about how it happens to parents. I've been talking for a long time about how it happens to whistleblowers and journalists. You got Julian Assange being killed in prison. He's the one who ought to be the Time Magazine Person of the Year, not Greta. Anyway, we'll be talking about this when we come back. And again, I'm going to get to the fourth turning. I'm going to talk about what's going on with the Second Amendment. That's where the fireworks will begin. Right now, everybody is looking at Virginia, the impeachment, but it is also what is happening in Virginia. These two things show us that we're rapidly moving towards a fourth turning. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
This is the David Knight Show.
Yes, there is a climate change coming, and it has not anything to do with the weather. It is a political climate change that is coming, and we have Pat Buchanan asking, will the secessionist epidemic ever end? And he talks about what just happened in the UK. For a second time, the people in Great Britain have said, we want out of the European Union. And then as part of this second election, the Scottish National Party won 48 out of Scotland's 59 seats in Parliament. The Nationalist Party wants to have its own separate country. And so their prime minister, or their, I don't know what her office is, Sturgeon, there, I guess she is the head of the Scottish National Party, calls it a mandate for a new vote to secede. She said if Boris thinks saying no is the end of the matter, then he is going to find himself completely and utterly wrong. You cannot hold Scotland in the Union against its will. Boris said, no, we're not going to allow even another vote on Scottish independence. Not even going to allow a vote on it. How do you justify that? Well, you don't, quite frankly. Northern Ireland is also talking about leaving. That would leave essentially Wales and England. And look, if they agree with each other, and if they disagree with Northern Ireland and Scotland. Let them go their way. As I said before, we've seen this happen peacefully in Scandinavia. We saw West Virginia peacefully leave Virginia. Virginia did not attack them. It was Lincoln who attacked. You have Czechoslovakia peacefully split. It can happen. As he says, Scotland, Pat Buchanan says, is Scotland fated to become for Britain what Catalonia is to Spain? You're going to keep these people in by force? You're going to send in thugs to beat them, to keep them from having an election? If they call an election, you're going to tell them they can't have an election, Boris? What's the matter with you? You know, how can you? And again, this is my whole issue with the American Civil War. How could a federal government that was essentially created on the principles of the Declaration of Independence and the right to self-government tell people that the very states that had created that federal government, you cannot leave? That's like saying to us, if we wanted to get out of the United Nations, sorry, you can't go. We say, wait a minute. We created the United Nations. We basically fund most of it more than anybody else. We want to leave. No, you can't go. We control you now. And we'll now send in an army to subjugate you. That's essentially what Lincoln did. You have to understand that. So where does this phenomenon, this continuing unraveling of old and proliferation of new nations, this epidemic of secessionism end, asked Pat Buchanan? Well, I'll tell you where it's going to end. It's going to end with liberty or slavery, as they always do. This is a pendulum that started swinging in one direction 150 years ago. And it wasn't just the American Civil War. As I've said many times before, the Industrial Revolution was the force that created the nation states. You look at Italy, for example. In the 1860s, at the same time we were having the American Civil War here, the same thing was happening there. You had the rising power of the industrialists as part of the Industrial Revolution. They wanted to have nation states. And you had a political revolution that happened, a civil war that happened in Italy, to make a consolidated nation state out of what was, prior to that, pretty much independent agrarian power sources that were, you know, evolved or been handed down from the nation states around Italy. The same thing happened in Germany as well, to create, you know, the German nation state. And, that kind of reverberated. It didn't have the same kind of conclusion. So that kind of reverberated into World War I and World War II. But see, what happened was we had this move from agrarian to industrial. We had a move to consolidation into a more centralized control of nation states. And that continued into the desire into the mid-20th century, early 20th century, when all of these technocratic elite, we're talking about how they needed world government. Woodrow Wilson, his League of Nations, the United Nations, all of that was part of that trend that began with the nation state, and they wanted to continue that trend to a one world government. That was the pendulum that began 150 years ago, globally. The Civil War was not about slavery, fundamentally. That was to people who can't see the forest for the trees. That was one issue of it here, but it was happening across the world. And now that pendulum is reversing because these people and their ambition to rule, their ambition knew no moderation. They couldn't be happy with a nation state. They needed global control. That's always the nature. It's just like John D. Rockefeller. How much money is enough? They said to the richest man in the world. He said, just a little bit more. How much power is enough for a nation state? Always just a little bit more. And so now we have the people who desire to have not only a League of Nations, not only a UN, but they want to consolidate that into a full government. They seek to have global control of every detail of every person's life. That's what we're looking at now with 2030. That's what we're looking at with the UN agenda for 2030, with 5G, with the smart cities, with Google's Sidewalk Labs. Their desire is to control every detail of every person's life, and they can do it with the technology. Is it already happening in China? So that's where this is going to end, and it is going to end with liberty or slavery, and it will probably pass through war because we are not going to be carried to a state of liberty on a feather bed. People in power never give up power. They never give up their money either. And so this is bigger than what is going on with impeachment. This is bigger than what's going on with what's happening in Virginia and with these open calls for Democrats. Began with Eric Swalwell. It was echoed by other minor candidates like Beto, saying, yeah, we're going to take the guns and we're going to have a war with you. And we want to have a war with Russia as well. I mean, these reckless, aggressive people in the Democrat Party, they're itching for a fight. They are the aggressors. And this is something, as I said, has been cooking for a very long time. They've been preparing for asymmetric warfare with the American people. That's what I showed you when I went with Joe Biggs into AP Hill. They're asymmetric, one of their asymmetric warfare centers for training for fighting in the cities. And they have others at other bases that are for training to fight Americans in rural areas. These are not just general urban warfare training. You know, you see that after the military, after the Air Force comes in, bombs out the enemy. It could be anywhere, generic. And you have people going through clearing buildings. You've seen the drill. You've seen it portrayed in movie after movie after movie. Where they have a bombed out building and SWAT teams do this. They have an order of attack. You know, one guy goes through the door. The other guys are doing crossfire and so forth. Clearing out building by building an area that has already been heavily bombed, but you have to occupy it with troops on the ground. That's not what's happening. That's not what they're training for at Fort AP Hill. They had the corner of 1st and Main. Everything was absolutely intact. And they're training for asymmetric warfare with American citizens. They were gaming for that. Painting patriots as the enemy. All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at what this really is because, as Pat Buchanan talks about this, he says, we had the American Revolution. That was the first secessionist movement. He doesn't pull this into the fourth turning perspective that Strauss and Howe put out there. I disagree with him. He said the second one was, the Texas independence. That really wasn't the same thing. The third one, he says, was, the Civil War. Civil War and the American Revolution were one of a thing. Now, there's an interesting other aspect of that that happened in 1832 to 33, the nullification crisis. It looked exactly like what eventually happened in 1861. It didn't happen then because the generational timing wasn't right. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'll talk about where we are at this particular time, this turning point in history when we return. Stay with us. Well, it is day 10 of our 12 Days of Christmas sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Instead of 10 Lords of Leaping, we have, I guess the FBI considers themselves to be our lords, don't they? Maybe we got 10 FBI leaking, leaking information to the press. We'll get into the FISA report coming up. But today, we have something even more useful than spies or FBI or FISA courts. We have 60% off of Alpha Power. Yes, you can be in charge of your energy again. Alpha Power supports a large amount of functions for your body to help you to the peak of your optimal health, and you can get it. Joins our other 9 sales that have already come out that are still up at InfoWarsStore.com. 60% off many different items. We've got 60% off BrainForce Plus. 60% off Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid. 60% off Bodies, our all-natural anti-inflammatory. We have 60% off Ultra 12, our vitamin B12, or 60% off our BioTruth Selenium. Totally organic, non-GMO selenium. We have 60% off Turbo Force and 60% off the Ultimate Krill Oil. And now we have today, our 10th day of our 12 Days of Christmas sale, 60% off of Alpha Power. You can find all of that as well as 50% off all apparel at InfoWarsStore.com. Free shipping free shipping, and double Patriot points at InfoWarsStore.com. Folks, we really do need your support. And you know as well as we do that free speech is under attack. I just talked about that. You know, 92% of Americans feel that their freedoms are threatened. And the freedoms that are threatened the most are freedom of speech, 48%. The right to keep and bear arms, 47%. The right to equal justice, 41%. Freedom of expression, 37%. Freedom of religion, 35%. And so you can see, out of those top five, three of them are about the First Amendment. And then a close second to the freedom of speech is the right to keep and bear arms. If there was a freedom of mobility that was talked about, they didn't even think that that was something that could be taken away from them. But as I said before, when they want to completely dominate you, that means that they want to take away your ability to communicate, your ability to shoot, and your ability to move. And that is the plan. We have been opposing this since before I came to InfoWars. I've been here for 7 years. And we have been supported by you. We really do need your support desperately at this time, because if they're going to come after the First Amendment, they're going to come after InfoWars first. And they did come after us. And then 2 months later, they came after another 800 sites. And they're still coming. And you better stand up and support that if you want that to survive. So we really do appreciate your support. Remember, we've got free shipping, double Patriot points, now 10 different items, 60% off, plus 50% off all apparel at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, let's get back to where this is all headed. As I said, Pat Buchanan was saying, will the secessionist epidemic ever end? He said, in June 1945, when the UN was created, it had 50 members. It begins 2020 with 193. They've gone from 50 nations to 193. Last week, Bougainville, I guess is the way you pronounce it, a South Pacific island cluster of Papua New Guinea, voted 98% in a non-binding referendum for independence to become the newest nation. And that happens after Papua New Guinea won its own independence from Australia just back when Gerald Ford was president. That's how fast things are moving. You know, Michael Savage talks about I think he wrote a book on it, perhaps, borders, language, culture. I don't think he got it from the Bible, but, he kind of came to the same conclusion because, the Bible is true. The Bible has always talked about people not by skin color or by race, because we're all one human race, and the skin color doesn't really matter, except to Democrats and people in Hollywood. But the Bible has always talked about nations, tongues, and tribes. So, you look at that. Michael Savage discovered that truth, maybe on his own, instead of reading the Bible. I don't know if he reads the Bible or not. But, nations, tongues, and tribes, or borders, language, and culture. See, nations are borders. Tongues, languages, obviously. Tribes are culture. Same thing. Eternal truths, whether we understand them and recognize them or not. Now, there is another truth that I think was revealed in a very careful analysis by Strauss and Howe, the guys who have a generational view of history. They wrote a book back in the mid-1990s called The Fourth Turning. These are the same people who gave us the term millennials. And I'm going to play for you a report that I did back in 2013 that breaks down what they had said back in the 1990s was going to happen in the mid-2000s and what was going to happen by about the year 2029 or 2030, interestingly enough. And they were not referring at that point in time to the UN 2030 agenda. That wasn't a thing when they wrote their book. But see, the globalists have a plan for dominance. And these are people who are very dangerous, very successful, very clever. And successful people do not have goals without having dates on them. They understand the trend. Strauss and Howe understand the trend. You better understand the trend. Here's a report from 2013.
The fourth turning is due to begin shortly after the new millennium, midway through the 00 decade. About the year 2005, a sudden spark will catalyze a crisis mood. Remnants of the old social order will disintegrate. Political and economic trust will implode. Real hardship will beset the land with severe distress that could involve questions of class, race, nation, and empire. The very survival of the nation will feel at stake. Sometime before the year 2025, America will pass through a great gate in history, commensurate with the American Revolution, Civil War, and twin emergencies of the Great Depression and World War II. The basis of this prediction is a cyclical view of history that Strauss and Howe discovered by going back through American and English history back to the mid-1400s. And they discovered that just as we have seasons of weather, we have seasons of society. And just as we don't know the exact date that winter is going to come, or whether it's going to be a harsh or a mild winter, we do know that it's going to follow fall, and we do know the approximate time that it's going to come.
We take a close look at the rhythms of American history, and in our book we make the following big prediction, that beginning about 10 years from now, America is due to enter an era of crisis, an era of political and social upheaval that will last around 20 years or so until the late 2020s. We call this era a fourth turning, and we think it's going to be a big threshold for the history of our nation. It's going to be something on par with World War II and the Great Depression, or going back the length of a human lifespan before then, the Civil War, or going back the length of another human lifespan, the American Revolution. It could be a time of tragedy or a time of great opportunity.
What they found was that societies will go through four phases of high, awakening, unraveling, and crisis. Humans go through four phases of life: childhood, young adult, midlife, and elderhood. And they noticed generations where people have shared experiences and attitudes are spaced about 20 years apart. And generations are shaped by where their childhood falls within the phases of society. Now, this got my attention because I noticed that there was a repeating pattern of about 72 years between significant dates in American history as well as some other histories. For example, if you go from the time the U.S. Constitution was written in 1789 to the beginning of the Civil War, 1861, that's 72 years. Another 72 years takes us to 1933, the beginning of the New Deal, another major transformation of American society. If you go another 72 years, that took us to about 2005. Exactly where Strauss and Howe had predicted a major crisis and change would occur. And in addition, if you look at the Russian Revolution, from 1917 to 1989 was about 72 years. So it seemed to fit with a life cycle of humans. In a cycle, four generations, 20 years apart, are shaped by when their childhood falls within that cycle. And the names they use in their book, The Fourth Turning, come from the biblical account of Exodus. For example, you have one generation as a prophet generation. Now think of Moses calling a generation to change. The next generation, the nomad generation, wandering in the wilderness, a period of crisis and restlessness. The following generation would be a hero generation. Think of the Joshua generation taking a promised land. That often involves a major war. And then finally, an artist generation, the generation that builds a new society. Well, where does Strauss and Howe think that we are in this cycle? The researchers see the millennial generation, those born between 1982 to 2004, as the hero generation. And they see our society entering a fourth turning, a crisis period where society will be fundamentally transformed as it was with the American Revolution, the Civil War, or the New Deal. And the last time we faced a fourth turning was the Great Depression and World War II. Strauss and Howe's predictions of 22 years ago now look prescient. And we can see the storm surge coming in our society.
That's right. That's
the
report
time.
I had just 6 years ago. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
So, are we in the middle of a fourth turning? Showed you that report going back to 1997. Actually, they'd written the book a couple of years prior to that. Strauss and Howe were talking about how it's been about 10 years. Well, that would have put it about 2007. A global economic crisis. Didn't that happen? Yeah, kind of did happen, didn't it? 2007. They said, you know, a little bit more than 10 years before it happened. They said there'll be a global economic crisis that will begin a fourth turning because these things are typically have their origins in economics. You follow the money. Follow the money. That's why I say if you want to understand what happened in the previous fourth turning, Civil War, you follow the money. It nearly happened. nearly happened in 1828, not 1861. Nearly happened then. You had, that's why I say it wasn't about slavery. And that's not to downplay the fact that slavery was immoral. It certainly was. No excusing it. But it was not the central motivating factor. It was the money. And it was the fact that you had the emerging industrial economic power bases. They wanted to consolidate power into a nation state. It was about a difference in whether they were going to have tariffs or whether they're going to have open trade at the borders and so forth. You know, as they began to join in political union, the first thing they do is to essentially open up an economic union. And so we saw this as we move into the middle of the 20th century. The guys start talking about having, well, we're going to have the European Union began as a common economic union. And then they further consolidate that with a currency that they then want to have, you know, political union and so forth. And then they want to draw that in ever tighter and closer. And after they created those, you know, they're going to have one in Europe, one in America, North American Union. They were going to have same thing happening in Asia, power base there, China, formed around China. Once they have these three power bases, then the next step was to have a to reproduce that pattern on a global basis. You know, first a national consolidation, then a regional consolidation, then a global consolidation. And so that's why we had the transatlantic partnership, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, America was going to be, you know, start to create those economic unions that were then going to pave the way for a global political union. It's very predictable. But we go back to 1828. At that point in time, you nearly had a civil war. In 1828, the people who were the rising industrialists put a 38% tax on 92% of everything in the South, everything that was imported. And, of course, the southern states were importing most of their stuff. They wanted to have a open trade. And so as that was put on, they called it the Tariffs of Abomination, and it created a nullification crisis in 1832 to 33. You had the resignation then of the vice president, who was from South Carolina, John C. Calhoun. The federal government responded with what they said was going to be the Force Act. They said, we will use force to keep you from leaving the Union. Now, that was 1832, 1833, the nullification crisis. They said, we're going to nullify those tariffs of abomination. And if necessary, we will leave. They said, well, if you leave, we're going to invade with force. Now, they were able to pull that back, even though the same thing happened, 29 years later. And the reason they were able to pull it back was because of the attitude, the generational attitude of the people at the time. The timing wasn't right. And I'm telling you right now, the timing is right. That's why you're seeing this impeachment stuff. That is the bigger context for impeachment. It is a bigger context for what's going on in Virginia and with these rabid gun-grabbing Democrats who are not just content to take your guns. They want to take your speech. They want to take your religion. They want to take your home, your meat, your car, everything from you. And we're not going to have it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I want to take a look at impeachment and what is happening in Virginia. Just one final comment about the fourth turning. And I want to show you here a little bit of a timeline. Guys, pull up that timeline as we look at this. Of course, what Strauss and Howe did was they began by looking at a generational view of history. And they actually went back 500 years into British history. And they said, you know, look, we can trace this trend of generational turnings and major restructuring of society every fourth generation. We can trace that back 500 years. And we can see then that it was something was happening with Britain and America. Then America became kind of predominant. And now it's kind of, you know, our cycles have been kind of synchronized, you might say, globally. And so we go back and you look at the fourth turning that was the American Revolutionary War. That was about 21 years that lasted. Then show the next one there. Of course, that was the Civil War we talked about and how all of the factors were there in 1832-33. You had the nullification crisis. They said, we don't like these tariffs. We're going to secede. They say, if you secede, we're going to invade you and so forth. And it came right up to the point in 1832. Didn't happen. But then in 1861, 29 years later, the timing was right. The generational timing was right. And we had a civil war. That didn't last as long. That was a four-year war that happened there. But it was building, you know, it was building from the Missouri Compromise in 1850 to 1861. Yeah, it's an 11-year period there. And then we go to the next one, the Great Depression and World War II. That was about a 17-year cycle. And again, as Strauss and Howe were saying in the early 90s, they said, you know, sometime in the mid-2000s, and he said it in 1997, about 10 years from now, there'll be some kind of a global economic crisis, which we did see happen. He said that'll kick off a fourth turning. Fourth turnings, again, you know, they don't happen in 1 year. They don't happen in necessarily 5 or 10 years, and they don't always take the same amount of time, but it took about 17 years, the Great Depression and World War II. And so if we began the fourth turning that we are in right now, if that began in 2007, they were saying, yeah, probably go, you know, to late 2020s, maybe 2029, 2030, and lo and behold, the globalists understand these trends in history as well, even though they don't necessarily write books about it. And they have the UN 2030 agenda. Now, they're telling you that they want to restructure society because of a climate crisis. But they know that society is going to be restructured one way or the other. And so they want to restructure it in their direction, where they have all the power and the control. And that might happen. You know, these things don't always result in greater freedom, do they? They can go wrong. And so we look then at what is happening in Virginia. And as we point out earlier, you know, 92% of the people think that freedom is under attack in America. First Amendment, but closely following that, you know, 48% say the First Amendment, free speech, is under attack, and then other aspects of it. But 47% say the Second Amendment. And here's what this is fundamentally about. Yesterday, a FedEx driver was robbed as he was returning to his vehicle, made a delivery. 32-year-old driver, just finished making a delivery. An armed man approaches him, robs him, and shoots him, and shot him in the stomach. He then pulled out his own weapon, fired back, and then ran back to his truck and drove himself to a nearby parking lot and called the police. The police subsequently found the robber, the 27-year-old gunman, in a residential driveway. He had gunshot wounds in his chest, back, and torso. The vehicle had, of course, his blood in it, a shell casing, and several stolen items inside. I've talked many times about my grandfather. I just mentioned it this week. His brother-in-law was killed collecting money at a route where they collected rent from people. And a guy tried to do that to him. He carried a gun. No shots were fired. There was no police report about it. But he saved his life. He didn't take the other guy's life. This particular individual was defending himself. And see, that's what the Second Amendment's about. Again, talking about the Civil War, Colonel Arthur Fremantle of the Coldstream Guard, the British Army, went to America during the American Civil War. He wanted to look at military tactics, what people were doing, how they were fighting, and so forth. You know, there's a lot of movies that are coming out right now about World War I and trench warfare. That actually began in the Civil War. Trench warfare was really pioneered as part of the Civil War. And as technology is always changing and war fighting tactics are always changing, there was much to learn. So Colonel Fremantle went to the United States. He wrote a book about it called 3 Months in the Southern States. And one of the things he said was, I've never seen a society where everybody is carrying a firearm like they do in the South. And he said, and I've never seen such a polite society. That was essentially paraphrased later on in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. An armed society is a polite society. Why? Because, you know, if you pull a gun on somebody and you shoot them, and they're armed, they may shoot you back like this FedEx driver did. And so it is a deterrent, and that is the purpose of the Second Amendment. It isn't that we want a war with you, but if you attack us like this robber did, if you try to rob us of our freedoms, Democrats in Virginia, we will fire back because we value our freedom more than we do our life. Just look at the situation with Navy pilots after this shooting that happened while I was on vacation. The Saudi who attacked the Air Force base killed E.N.S. Watson, a small arms instructor captain of the rifle team at the U.S. Naval Academy. He was killed. I saw the interview that his family did. It was heartbreaking. They did it with, it was a Fox interview that they did. He was not allowed to carry a gun to protect himself. Our government, think about this, our government does not trust their own soldiers and sailors to have firearms for their own protection. Do you think they trust you as a citizen? Of course they don't. They have contempt for you, the same kind of contempt they have for their soldiers. They want to keep those arms locked up until they unleash them, put them in a situation where they've got to fight for their lives. And then here's some guns. Now you can fight for your life. They do not want to have an armed citizenry, even their own soldiers, especially their own soldiers, because they really know how to use them. That's why they work so hard to take the guns away from veterans. And they will be the focus of the red flag gun laws. And so you've got Navy pilots now are livid over the law that makes them what they call soft targets on military bases after this attack in Pensacola. This was a law, by the way, that was passed in 1992. Who was president in 1992? Bush the First, George H.W. Bush in 1992. Yes, the election was held in 1992, but he was president at that point in time. You know, the same guy who was president when they went after Ruby Ridge and so forth. That was on Bush's watch. And, of course, all the stuff that happened with Waco was a carryover of the same people that Bush had in power. Yeah, it was exacerbated by Clinton and Janet Reno and so forth, but no friend of the Second Amendment, the Bushes. So under 1992 law, under George Bush the First, they said we can't trust the military to have weapons. As they pointed out, this guy that was one of the people killed there, Watson, small arms instructor, captain of the rifle team, yet when charged with standing the watch, he was equipped with nothing more than a logbook and a pen. Could not defend the base, could not defend other people's lives, could not defend his own life. The pilots say this is reprehensible. The trained warfighters must be at the mercy of off-base civilian law enforcement. Oh, it's much worse than this. It's a government afraid of its own military. And President Trump's own defense secretary, Esper, said, well, we can try to do better. But at the same time, these are communities and we've got to balance out interests. No, there is no balancing of liberty against safety. If you take away people's liberty, you will not be safe. And they just saw this, didn't they, in Pensacola. Take away our rights, we're not safe. What's happening in Virginia? People are organizing. We've got, as I pointed out yesterday, I don't know if it's increased. It keeps increasing. It was 70 some odd of 90 counties, I think 78, if I'm going from memory here, had declared themselves Second Amendment sanctuary cities. And then a lot of towns and so forth. So it was essentially resolutions that were passed in 98 different areas as of like 2 days ago. And they continue to pass them. And there is a big rally that is set for next Monday, the 23rd of December. The Virginia Citizens Defense League is calling for a massive pro-Second Amendment rally to be held on the steps of the Virginia Capitol at 8 a.m. from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Monday, January the 20th, 2019. Wait, that date is wrong, I think, because Monday is not the 20th, it's the 23rd. Anyway, you can look up the FAQ for the event. You can find that this article is coming from Break the Matrix. It is the VCDL. They'd like to get 50,000. I think they should just put this up and say, we'll take what we can get. Because, you know, they get several thousand people. They've already had 6,500 people mark as interested. 3,000 said they're planning to attend. You don't want to try to overreach on these things. You always want to exceed expectations. So that's one thing for people who are organizing at the grassroots level. Don't try to set expectations too high. I have covered politics for so long. I can tell you that I have gone to situations where they had people running for Congress, people running for Senate at the state level, and many, many different local offices of both parties, and nobody showed up except for the candidates and their staff. People don't typically show up for politics. I know things are getting hotter now, but you know, if you can get several hundred people to show up for a political event, that is a big victory. If you get several thousand to show up, that is huge. You don't need 50,000. I mean, this is, you know, people in America, even in Virginia, don't take their freedoms as seriously as the people in Hong Kong do. Let's just understand that. But in an FAQ video for the event, the Virginia delegate and congressional candidate Nick Freitas states that you'll be allowed to conceal carry at the event, even though the Democrats may change the rules. So weapons will not be allowed inside the building. Because, you know, that's what Democrats do. They change the rules all the time. And so that will be coming up. Now, I've got Vince in Virginia sent me an update as to what happened in a county where he lives. He said last night a county that was turned over from Republican to Democrat in the last election, they had several thousand people. They had 3,000 people show up to a county event. That's what I'm saying. This is absolutely amazing for American politics to see 3,000 people turn up for a county event. I've seen people, like I said, full slate of candidates, and nobody showed up. Both parties, and nobody showed up. Their board gave a sanctuary vote 7-0. However, it was flipped from Republican to Democrat, and so Democrats will be taking control in a few weeks, and they promised to overturn it because they don't support the Second Amendment or any individual rights, quite frankly. Whether you're talking about the right to keep and bear arms, or you're talking about the right to life, or you're talking about the right to speak, the right to the free expression of religion, the right to a free press, Democrats do not support any rights. Let's just understand that. They don't support due process either. They don't support any of the Bill of Rights. And unfortunately, most Republicans don't either. Most establishment Republicans, the grassroots does. That's where our only hope is, folks. The only hope is to cut ourselves off from these people who have gone down the tube. And so he pointed out, he said, a number of speakers pointed out that this is really about more than just about guns. It's really about submission. It's about the rule of law. And in one county, they had another county. They had 2,000, over 2,000 people showed up. They had 74 people who spoke. This was last Thursday. There will be a voting on this on Monday night, which is actually the 23rd. It's not the 20th. In this draft resolution that was put out, it began by talking about the Second Amendment of the Constitution. Then it talked about the Constitution of Virginia. Then it talked about the Heller Amendment, the Heller Supreme Court, I should say, not the amendment, the Supreme Court decision, Heller, which was when Washington, D.C. told an off-duty police officer he couldn't take his gun with him. It said, no, a right to keep and bear arms means that you can carry the gun. That's what it means to bear arms. And then, of course, you had McDonald versus Chicago, which says that the right of an individual to keep and bear arms is protected and incorporated in the Due Process Clause, which, again, you know, is something that they want to get rid of, due process. And then referred to the Miller case that I've talked about that happened in the 1930s. Where they supported the first major gun control legislation in the United States. The Supreme Court said, yeah, they can do that because this guy was using, Miller was using a sawed-off shotgun in the commission of a crime, bank robbery. And that's not allowed because the only legitimate arms that are allowed under the Second Amendment are military weapons. Think about how they flipped that script on us, right? You know, we hear Eric Swalwell, we hear McRaven and McChrystal and all these people say, you aren't allowed to have any guns that the military has. No, it was exactly the opposite argument by the Supreme Court in the Miller case. They said, well, Supreme Court can, you know, support limitation of people owning firearms because these aren't military weapons. Only problem with that is that it is not limited to military weapons, and they were lying about that fact because sawed-off shotguns had been used as military weapons in both World War I and in the Civil War. And then finally he talks about how all of these things, these three Supreme Court decisions, the Constitution of Virginia, the Constitution of the United States, are all being pushed back against by these laws, this aggression by the Democrats in the 2020 General Assembly of Virginia. Unfortunately, he goes through and he has some bullet points at the end of it, besides the sanctuary city thing. He says, we'd like to see, these are some of the things we'd like to see. We'd like to see additional funding from the Commonwealth of Virginia for firearms education in schools and firearms safety education across the Commonwealth. I agree. That's good. We'd like to see you waive sales tax on gun safes and gun safety locks to help promote safe gun handling practices. Well, that's reasonable. Yeah, I think that would do that. If they really want safety, then, you know, encourage people to buy safety devices like gun safes and so forth by taking the tax off. I've said that about health care for the longest time. If you're really serious about health care, first of all, you allow us to deduct our health care expenses before we have to pay our taxes, wouldn't you? But you're not, because you're just using that as a point of control over our lives. But going on with this, he says also, increased funding for school resource and school security officers. Okay, well, that's fine as well, too. I mean, you should. I don't see anything there about teaching teachers how to protect themselves and allowing them to protect themselves and their students. And my friend Vince in Virginia said, yeah, this guy is a friend of Petraeus. He's kind of a sellout. And here you can see this in these last two. Strong penalties for adults that have their firearms accessed by children and mental health screening. It gets right back into that red flag gun law stuff. That's what you got to watch out for with these Republicans, many of them. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
And now, the David Knight Show.
Rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop.
Welcome back. We're going to be joined by Alex Newman. As a matter of fact, we're trying to establish a connection with him right now. We're having a little bit of trouble getting him. Alex Newman from The New American, and he's returning from the COP25, they call it. You know, the 25th time they've had a big climate scare conference. They've been doing this for 25 years, and every year they tell us we're going to die if we don't get this done. And we're still alive. And they still keep having their conferences with tens of thousands of politicians and their incredibly wasteful entourage following them around. He was there, and we're going to get a report from what he saw there. I want to also ask him why. It's going to take another year for us to officially get out of the Paris Climate Accord when we were never in that treaty. How does it take another year to get out of a treaty that we were never in? But we'll talk about how that whole thing melted down while we're trying to get contact with Alex. I just want to remind you about our new 12 Days of Christmas sale, and we are now up to day 10, and we have added 60% off of Alpha Power. Alpha Power, a great way to help your body bring yourself up to optimal health to support your energy. 60% off of Alpha Power, and that joins other specials that have been part of our 12 Days of Christmas sale. All of this available with free shipping and double Patriot points. You know, we have 50% off InfoWars apparel, a great Christmas gift, and again, you can get that free shipping and double Patriot points. But we also have 60% off these other 12-day specials. BrainForce Plus, if you try this, folks, you're going to love this. It's so many different supplements that we have, you know, things like vitamin B12 or selenium. Yeah, B12, you can feel B12. Selenium, you're not going to feel, but you can do the research. You know that you need selenium. It's a vital, essential mineral for your body to be healthy. 60% off BioTru Selenium, non-GMO, made out of organic materials. Ultra 12 or vitamin B12, 60% off. Bod Ease, all natural anti-inflammatory product. Bod Ease, 60% off. Knockout or all natural sleep aid. Again, it's not just elderly people having trouble with their disrupted sleep cycles. It's because of the proliferation of cell phones and computers and the blue light that resets your body clock. A lot of people of every age are having problems sleeping. Knockout is transformative if you're having sleep problems. 60% off that. Brain Force Plus, again, you're going to feel that right away. 60% off. I would call it Brain Focus. And we have 60% off the Ultimate Krill Oil. And now today, 60% off of Alpha Power. Free shipping, double Patriot points. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com for the 12 Days of Christmas sale. We really do appreciate and need your support. All right, we do have Alex Newman on the line right now. Again, he writes regularly for The New American. You can find him at TheNewAmerican.com. He also has a Twitter account, AlexNewman_JOU, as in journalist. Thank you for joining us, Alex.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you back. It's been a while because you've been traveling a lot. We were going to get you in earlier this week, and you were so busy traveling. It's difficult to establish contact with you in the early morning. But tell us a little bit about what you saw at the climate conference that they had to reschedule from Santiago, Chile, because of the austerity programs and the fact that they're raising public transportation prices on people. They had to reschedule it because of all that unrest to Madrid. It was very difficult for our new female messiah to make that conference, but she got there. So I'm sure that you got a glimpse of Greta, or as I pointed out, we really ought to start calling her Greta, because it's $750 billion just for Goldman Sachs alone if they can get this kind of stuff through. So it really is about the greed, isn't it?
It absolutely is, David. And, you know, being there, you really understand why the American media has remained almost totally silent about this. You get the feeling of being in a gigantic insane asylum run by criminal madmen who are only interested in stealing your money and enslaving you. It's absolutely surreal, David. And, you know, St. Greta's strutting around and you have thousands of so-called journalists and world leaders bowing down at her feet. And then anytime anybody criticizes their ideology and, you know, their fake hypothesis that man's emissions of CO2 are going to kill the planet, suddenly you're making fun of a child with a mental disorder. How dare you? You're so evil.
Yeah.
So, you know, from a PR perspective, it was a brilliant move. But it was really unbelievable, David. You had all these Americans trotted out on the stage to talk about how horrible America was and how evil Donald Trump was and how we're all climate criminals. It was incredible. And, you know, the reality is they're very, very confident about their success. They think now it's just a waiting game. You know, wait for President Trump to be gone and we will go full speed ahead right over the cliff.
Yeah. And, you know, it's come out now in the last couple of days as they've announced this Hulu documentary that they've had a film crew following her around from, you know, the very inception of her campaign. So this whole thing was orchestrated by these people for a very long time.
It clearly was. And, you know, I was actually living in Sweden when St. Greta was discovered by the powers that be. You know, Sweden is an interesting place. They have an indoctrination system that I think would have made the Soviets or maybe the North Koreans blush. It is absolutely total, comprehensive, incredibly effective. And
they call it the Stockholm Syndrome.
Right. It'd be a very appropriate name. But, you know, they're very effective at brainwashing these poor children. They get them all stuffed in the classroom and then they terrorize them. Oh, evil climate criminal, you're all going to die because of your horrible parents. And, you know, if I had stood up on stage and talked to adults the way that Greta was talking to, you know, the parents' generation and the world leader, you guys are all terrible. You messed up my future. You know, I would have been slapped in the face, and rightfully so. But Swedish children and American children, too. You know, Al Gore was very clear. Hey, all your youth are marching out in our climate marches. You know, it's just a matter of time before our ultimate victory. They're brainwashing these poor kids, weaponizing them, and then using them as a battering ram to break down civilization. You know, last time I was on your program, David, we talked about the so-called educational system.
That's right.
This is their secret weapon, and they made it very, very clear throughout the COP25. You know, they know older Americans are skeptical. They know Trump has called it a Chinese hoax. It drives them absolutely mad, but they also know they've got most of our kids, and that's their Trump card.
That's right. They can change the culture. They can change the politics. and they can do it through the educational system. And that's why it was so important when you are. Do you still have the website? I know that was a big project for the New American. They created a separate magazine. We talked about that, as you pointed out, last time you were on. Is that still available at New American?
That is, yeah, it's thenewamerican.com/rescuingourchildren. You can get printed or PDF copies of the special report. And actually, we do spend quite a bit of time in there talking about the centrality of this man-made global warming hypothesis and the brainwashing of the children to accept it in the broader goal for a new world order. You know, they are trying to, you know, they can't convince adult Americans for the most part, but younger Americans, they're trying to convince them that the gas they exhale is actually a toxic pollution and that we're all doomed unless we let the UN tax and regulate it. This is going to be fundamental to the global system that they're building. And as they see it, it's just a waiting game right now.
You know, it's not just the political stuff, but we talk all the time, and we did last time you were on, about the destruction, the spiritual destruction of our children. You know, the pushing of the transgender agenda and so forth. Teen Vogue, again, you know, it's not the school, but it is entertainment. They now have a top transgender Christmas gifts, chest binders, scar cream and everything for teenagers after they've had mutilating surgery and so forth. I mean, this kind of insanity is being pushed against, as I pointed out yesterday, against autistic kids. If you don't understand what a danger the education system is to your children, that's what Alex Newman said last time. He had a great example, Alex. You said you got a burning building. First thing you do is go in there and you get your kid out of there, and then you try to put that fire out because it's going to burn down your community. And that's the political aspect of it. But first, save your kids. I mean, if Americans don't care about saving their kids from this kind of self-destructive behavior, and it's not just mutilating themselves, but it's also telling them, you know, you are a poison. You are a disease on the planet. That's the way they've been selling this. You know, Gaia is some kind of a, you know, earth goddess, and we are the virus that's destroying it. You're talking about the air that we breathe out. We've got The Guardian talking about how we're going to have peak meat by 2030. Again, always 2030. That's where we're going to limit your meat. We'll talk more about that, and when we come back, I want to talk to you, Alex, about the idea that, you know, they, like you said, they're waiting for Trump to get out. They think they've got us in. Nancy Pelosi said we're still in. Well, no, we're not. We're not in the Paris Climate Accord, and I don't even understand why the Trump administration is saying it's going to take another year. But we'll be right back with Alex Newman. Welcome back. We're talking to Alex Newman. He went to the COP25, climate conference that was rescheduled from Chile to Spain. And I want to ask you, Alex, when you were there, we have all this talk. We had Nancy Pelosi go there and say, we're still in. And when I reported that, I said, we're not in. We never were in. You can't self-ratify a treaty as John Kerry and Barack Obama said they were going to do. And immediately, you know, President Trump, well, not immediately. It took him 6 months because you had Rex Tillerson, a big oil climate change supporter, and Ivanka telling President Trump, you know, don't do anything about it. And he had other people in the administration telling him, you don't really need to do anything about it. They didn't formally get this done. But you had other people telling him, no, you must formally oppose this because the Democrats are going to pretend that we're in it. And she still is pretending that we're in it, even though President Trump said we're not. And so my question to you is, what is going on with this? Because, you know, this is like saying that, and they've done this over and over again, they did it with DACA and so forth, say that President Trump cannot, with an executive order, overturn the previous president's executive order. What's going on? Why is it going to take the Trump administration another year to formally, quote unquote, formally get out of a treaty that we were never formally in?
Fantastic question, David. And this is a really confusing area. I think the globalists have deliberately tried to muddy the waters here. They are pretending like the Paris Agreement is a legitimate treaty that's been properly ratified. Of course, we know that it hasn't been. Obama called it an executive agreement. I actually went and searched my constitution. You can take my word for it. There's nothing in there about an executive agreement. And they said that, you know, under the terms of the Paris Agreement, you can't get out until the day after the next presidential election. Of course, they did that on purpose. And for whatever reason, the Trump administration has accepted this. And the U.S. State Department, I actually talked with the U.S. State Department delegation that was over in Madrid for this COP25 summit, and they're treating that as legitimate. They are saying that The day after the next election will be our final day in the Paris Agreement. But they're also saying that after the election, the next president can just come along and it only take 1 month to reverse that decision and get us back in. So you did have this huge delegation of Democrats come over there, Nancy Pelosi and almost a dozen Democrats from Congress, including Senator Whitehouse, who wanted to prosecute climate deniers, literally under the RICO statutes, right? Anti-mafia legislation. That's how unhinged these people are. And they are absolutely confident that they're going to succeed, even if Trump wins another election, because I think we'll just have to wait a little longer, you know, give it another 4 years after that. So that's the reality. And you know who came to Madrid, actually, was Trump's climate advisor. He actually resigned finally after a couple of years on the National Security Council, Dr. William Happer of Princeton University. And I've known him for some years. We've spoken multiple times on these issues. And he had some really insightful comments, David, that he delivered at a climate reality conference that took place in Madrid, organized by some skeptical organizations. He said, first of all, you touched on this before the break. What's going on over at the COP25, he said, this is a destructive, a bizarre environmental cult is the term he used. And it really is. I mean, these people now have adopted all the trappings of religion, you know, and they've counterfeited true religion. Hey, you're a sinner. You have a carbon footprint. You ate a cheeseburger. Now you must pay the UN and Al Gore to, get out of purgatory, so to speak. Right?
You got to pay an indulgence. That's what a carbon tax is. It's an indulgence. And you've even got the Pope now saying we got ecological sins. I mean, they really truly are embracing every aspect of this as a religion.
That's right. And you have St. Greta, you know, Her Holiness, lecturing us all on what evil sinners we are and how we all deserve hell. And if we don't, you know, this has really become a religion. And what
Joan of Arc
said, they're calling her that. I mean, there's people now in Sweden saying she's a saint, the successor to Jesus Christ. So this is the kind of mentality that these people are coming from. It's a dangerous false religion. But Dr. Happer had some very insightful comments. You know, he said it's clear Trump recognizes this is absolutely phony. Trump understands this. But what Dr. Happer said is unless Trump comes out and changes the narrative, these people are going to win. He said, you know, we can talk about it. It's too expensive. We're not going to join it because it doesn't make sense from a financial perspective. But if that's the approach we take, we're going to lose over the long term. And so Dr. Happer was working with Trump to try to change the narrative. He says the bureaucracies are absolutely packed with people who don't want to put their necks out and really take the initiative to point out that, no, this pseudoscience is a false religion. It needs to be stopped. It's incredibly destructive. And Mark Morano said this, too. We interviewed him at the COP25. He said, unless we change the narrative, this battle is over.
That's right. That's right. And this whole thing about even the treaty, it's one of these things that makes me just want to bang my head into the wall. When I look at DACA, for example, okay, you got the executive order that came not even from Obama directly, but from his Homeland Security Secretary saying she's going to defer enforcement of the law. She took an oath to enforce the law. She says, well, I'm not going to enforce it. And that was their order. And then you got the entire judiciary telling President Trump, well, now you can't change that. And he acquiesces to that in the same way that they say, well, you know, Obama self-ratified us into this treaty and you can't undo that. And you go, oh, okay. He listens to these people around him or people on the other side of the aisle, or he listens to, the lawyers and the corrupt judiciary absolutely lying. And this is like coming onto a plantation after the 13th Amendment was passed and telling everybody, well, you know, it looks like you're free, but you're really not. I'm telling you, just take my word for it. Oh, okay. Well, I'll keep working on the plantation.
It really is troubling, David. I think Trump has the right instincts. He wants to do the right thing, but he is in the midst of a swamp that absolutely intends to destroy not just him, but the American people as well. So I hope in the second term he will become much more bold, start getting rid of some of these terrible advisors, and really come out swinging. You know, at the COP25, David, and none of this was reported in the American media, but these people have gone absolutely stark raving mad. They are saying now that we cannot avoid paying for loss and damage. They're demanding climate reparations. They're saying the U.S. must pay. There's no way to get out of it. You have an international relations professor at the University of Copenhagen saying the UN can declare climate change to be a threat to international peace and security, and then they can use UN peace troops to go enforce these UN climate decrees on nations that resist. That's the kind of unhinged insanity that is coming out of the mouths of the people who are running this clown show called the UN COP25. And again, nothing about it in the American media, but in Europe, they're reporting it. In Africa, they're reporting it. In Asia, they're reporting it. It's only Americans who are being kept in the dark because they know if Americans wake up and put their foot down, this whole freak show comes to a screeching halt.
We've already had a lot of people, even at the Pentagon, saying this is the greatest threat that we face, not terrorism or, you know, Russia or China. No, it's climate change in our own Pentagon. And then, as you point out, you got these people saying, well, we could use UN troops and so forth. When you mentioned reparations, you know, we had the Daily Guardian. I've got the article right here in front of me. UN warns U.S. cannot escape paying climate reparations. Let's understand what they mean by reparations. They're not even just talking about carbon taxes. This is far worse than that. When they talk about reparations, what they're trying to do is justify outright confiscation. And it's far worse than carbon taxes. I mean, carbon taxes are bad enough. It's a scheme, as I pointed out. That's why, you know, talked about that yesterday with Goldman Sachs and saying, you know, really the way you pronounce her name is Greta, because it's really about that unbridled greed that's there. But, you know, the carbon taxes, they have to have a global problem for a global government, and you got to find a way to fund that global government. So, of course, you know, carbon taxes. But the reparations is a way to come in and just confiscate the wealth of nations outright. And that's being pushed by The Guardian and these other people at this climate conference.
Oh, they said it was mandatory, that we must pay it. We can't get out of it. And, you know, what they're saying is, hey, there was bad weather in, you know, some Latin American country. That's because the U.S. Developed and emitted carbon dioxide. And so now the U.S. taxpayer must pay to, you know, the third world kleptocrats to make up for these alleged damages caused by CO2 emissions. It sounds absolutely bonkers to anybody with common sense. But this is the rhetoric that's coming out of the mouths of world leaders on the world stage at these summits. And unless the American people firmly stand up and say it's not going to happen, this is where we're headed. And get this, you know, you mentioned Russia, Russian collusion. You know how you can know these people don't actually believe the garbage? And certainly the young, you know, brainwashed zombies right. do. But at the higher levels, you know they don't believe this. Communist China is emitting way more CO2 than the United States, and their CO2 emissions are on the way up. And they said they're going to keep going up. They're going to keep building, coal-fired power plants. And I don't hold that against them. Build as many coal-fired power plants as you want. CO2 is good for the planet. But if they
I was just
really
going to
believe,
ask you that. Did you hear anybody, Alex, at that conference criticize China or India about their emissions?
Not a peep, David. And what you do have is all these environmental groups getting funding from the Kremlin. And this was documented by the U.S. Congress. They found out that the Kremlin was funding a shell corporation in Bermuda called Klein Limited. This Klein Limited was then sending it to the Sea Change Foundation in the United States. And then the Sea Change Foundation was funding the Climate Action Network and all these different green groups. So you have the Russians and Gazprom, which makes up 50% of Russian exports, funding green groups in the United States to keep our energy in the ground. If they really believed CO2 was going to kill the planet, this whole farce would have been exposed.
Can you stay one more segment? Since we got down a little bit late. All right, we're going to keep Alex Newman on one more segment. Yeah, that exposes the true fraud of this. And even the true believers, when they looked at the Paris Climate Accord, they said, wait a minute, we got the two biggest polluters on Earth, China and India. Nothing is being done to them with this Paris Climate Accord. It is a fraud. It's about nothing other than transferring wealth. That's exactly what it is. Reparations.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Alex Newman, thenewamerican.com. And again, it always goes back, Alex, to education. You know, we talk about how they're using and abusing Greta. But they're also, as I pointed out yesterday, there's a lawsuit that's just been filed against a lot of the tech companies over what is happening with electric batteries, lithium batteries, lithium ion batteries. And a key component of that is not just the lithium that I believe is one of the reasons why we are in Afghanistan indefinitely, but also what was behind the Bolivian coup. You also have the cobalt mines, which is a big part of that in Africa. And so we have children, African children, who are being endangered, impoverished, enslaved in mines to get these natural resources, just like you see Greta being abused and used in a different way. But, of course, it's our own children who are being brainwashed in the schools, brainwashed to accept their own slavery, their own starvation, their own austerity that is going to be imposed upon them because they should sacrifice themselves to this false narrative of climate change. And that's really what we've got to unload, isn't it? This educational propaganda that is a stronghold over our children in order to remake society.
Absolutely, David. And I think if we're going to win this over the long term, that is going to be the only strategy that is successful, is dealing with the education. Because, again, at the COP25, they were really open about the fact that, hey, you know, the young kids are ours, right? They're out marching. And Al Gore said it. The young kids, all your kids are out there marching in the streets for climate justice. It's just a matter of time. We are unstoppable now. Of course, they want to reduce the number of children. Reducing, you know, depopulating the planet was a huge topic at the COP25. But you had every kind of educational quack organization there. We actually ran into one lady. She had a device funded by the European Union, by the way, the taxpayers. A device that would show children how the concentration of CO2 is going up in their classroom as they sit in there. And then they tell them, oh, kids, you know, this is bad for you. It's going to make you tired. It's going to make you groggy. So you got to open up the window now that the concentration of CO2 has gotten higher. This is absolutely, completely ludicrous, David. The idea that CO2 is somehow going to harm these children. And yet this is what they're telling little kids in classrooms all across Europe. They're telling them that having babies is bad for the planet. They're telling them that, doing pretty much anything except submitting to the UN is going to harm Mother Earth. So the kids are the key. It's the strategy that the globalists are using. And if we want to defeat them, we're going to have to address this issue.
You know, I look back at this, and they had the first Earth Day when I was in high school. I'm that old. And they were telling everybody we're going to be out of oil. We're going to have a ice age. We're going to have massive starvation. So we got to have population reduction and so forth. I've seen these lies. I've seen them cycle. I've seen them rotate. They were the same people who were telling us we had peak oil and we're going to be out of oil. I've shown the magazines many times how Newsweek and Time Magazine were telling everybody we're going to be totally out of oil and natural gas by the mid-1980s. But at that time, they were saying, we got to find another source of energy. We're all going to die. Now they just want us all to die. They're talking about peak meat and peak population and all this. And they don't want even replacement for this stuff. They just want us to die, don't they?
That's exactly right, Dan. We've got so much footage of this. Some of it we've already put out there. We're going to be putting out more. We've got multiple top UN speakers. I mean, these were people on the most prominent stages at this UN conference. 25,000 people at these things openly telling us, don't have kids. One guy, a director of the movie Woodstock from Hollywood, he points at my face. I said, what's the solution? He said, don't have kids. And I'm looking at you, white man. Then you have others saying, oh, there's too many Africans. We got to shower them with abortions and, birth control pills. These people are crazy. One of my colleagues got a video over at a recent UN summit, the one they held in Salt Lake City, of a guy laughing. We can't kill them all. That's where
it is. A suicide cult. And they're serving your kids the Kool-Aid in the government schools. It's just that simple, folks. And Alex Newman has been at the foundation. That is where this is the wellspring of this insanity. The wellspring of this suicide cult is the government-run schools. Get your kids out. Take a look at Alex Newman at thenewamerican.com. Thank you so much, Alex. We'll be right back, folks.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I'm going to get into what's going on with impeachment here, but just to finish up on this suicide cult of climate change and how they are brainwashing the kids. This article from The Guardian, reach peak meat by 2030 in order to tackle climate crisis, say, quote unquote, scientists. Yeah, anybody who pronounces, oh, you are a scientist, well, let's bow down. You know, the argument from authority. No, they're not scientists. They're bureaucrats. They're not even rational. Because listen to what they're saying. Cattle and sheep emit large amounts of methane, huge amounts of carbon dioxide. Therefore, we have to eliminate the cattle and sheep, right? Except, and we have to go back to plant-based diets. Now, these scientists, maybe somebody needs to point out to these scientists, these pseudoscientists, what are you going to do? You're going to starve the humans by not letting them have cattle and sheep. And then you're going to eliminate the carbon dioxide, reduce the carbon dioxide. So that means you're going to starve the plants. You're going to starve the plants. What do the plants need? They need sunlight. They need carbon dioxide, and they need soil, of course. But it's carbon dioxide. They breathe carbon dioxide. You're going to starve. You're going to suffocate the plants. idiots. What a bunch of fools these people are. And they think that you're a fool. And your kids are being deliberately dumbed down, propagandized, and brainwashed to accept their own starvation. Not only starving them of food, but starving them of the joy of having families and children. Starving them of their human rights and their freedom and their ability to live with dignity. Because, folks, we're not just talking about, we talk about eliminating energy. Again, you know, the big scramble. I'll tell you, millennials, you may say, okay, boomer, you know, because you don't want to hear this. You don't want to pay any attention. You don't want to learn science. You don't want to learn anything from history. And you don't want to hear anybody who's been there, done that. You just dismiss it. You say, okay, boomer. Okay, boomer. Well, you're going to attend a school of experience, and it has a very, very high tuition if you're just going to shut this off because you're so wise in your own eyes and you know nothing. We've seen this all before. And just think about the if you knew even the most fundamental things about the fact that carbon dioxide is not a poison, it is necessary for the plants. And all this stuff, it all goes back to the idea that you think the human beings are some kind of an accidental thing here. It is a designed system. God designed a complementary feedback loop system. And you don't understand that. And you reject it. You reject God. You reject the system that he designed. We talk about this meat stuff. You know, the idiot propagandist who's been following Greta around, this orchestrated PR campaign that began from day one to set her up as a poster child, to use her as a human shield against any criticism. How dare you criticize a child? How dare you do this? How dare you do that? What they're using her for is the same thing. These people are not showing themselves. But what they're doing is exactly what Saddam, I've said this before, exactly what Saddam Hussein did with those little kids that he put on his lap and goes, you don't want to attack me, do you? Because I've got this little child here sitting in my, you'd kill this little child. And that's what Goldman Sachs and these other people are using Greta for. She is their human shield. Now, they're smart enough to not even show themselves. They stay in the background. And they get somebody like this director, Nathan Grossman, who's going to do this Hulu film. He's been following her from day one of her supposedly organic viral rise. No. She is AstroTurf. AstroTurf, not organic. It was orchestrated and planned. This guy, director Nathan Grossman, RT Report says, only got one other IMDb credit. You know, that's the Internet Movie Database, where they put in everything. The only other film that he has done is a film that's called Lusts of the Meat. Lusts of the Meat, where he was going back and essentially repenting of his life as a carnivore. These people are sick. And it all comes back down to the food. Again, starve them from food. Tell them not to reproduce, you know, because this is what these people want. They are going to get population reduction. They're going to control the people's activities and movements. They're going to control your speech, your right to defend yourself, your ability to move, your choices about what you want to live, where you want to live, how you're going to live, what you're going to eat. Everything is going to be taken from you. And they know that you're not going to like that. So they want to reduce the number of people who are going to push back against them and increase their leverage with technology at the same time. That's really what's going on here, folks. And the saddest thing about it is that even when we get somebody like President Trump, and again, you know, he fundamentally shares our values, but he doesn't know what he's doing. That's the saddest thing about this. He's absolutely clueless about what the Constitution is. He lets people gaslight him over this Paris Climate Accord the same way they gaslighted him over the DACA thing. He doesn't understand that as president, he has the authority and the duty to investigate corruption, to protect our borders, to defend this country. He doesn't have to get the permission of the judiciary. And he has the same power that Obama has. If Obama can put us into a treaty instead of following the Constitution, then President Trump can take us out of a treaty. I mean, it's just simple logic. You don't even have to know the Constitution. If you were so ignorant of the Constitution that you thought that Obama and John Kerry could self-ratify a treaty, if you're that ignorant, then you got to also, however, realize, wait a minute, I'm president, therefore, you know, I could undo that. What's going on with this? He's so caught up with this impeachment stuff that he can't get anything done. And we got his favorite program, Fox and Friends, a couple of days ago. Brian Kilmeade, absolutely stunned, he said, absolutely stunned by the Fox News poll. Now, you saw this on the Drudge Report, didn't you, on Monday? Fox and Friends co-host Brian Kilmeade told viewers he was stunned by a Fox News poll that showed 54% support for impeachment, which is all the more stunning, says Mediaite, considering that he misstated the results as only 50%. He said, gee, I don't understand this, because he can't criticize his own network as a bunch of anti-Trump shills putting out fake polls. And of course, the sad thing about it, that's the only article that appeared on the Drudge Report. You know, oh, look at this. You know, the Fox is his own favorite people here, as Mediaite is saying. His favorite news show is understating it and still astounded, because it's much worse than even his own people will admit. It was total baloney. Do you realize that there were three polls that were released that completely contradicted Fox News? Fox News was the extreme outlier in that. And let's underscore the liar part. Fox News released the poll on Sunday showing that voters supported impeachment by 54 to 46%. However, Quinnipiac had just released a poll showing that voters opposed impeachment by 51 to 45%. Monmouth University released a poll showing, and these were all done at the same time. They were all done last week. And so they all released their results at the end of the week. So Quinnipiac says, no, they oppose it 51-45. Monmouth University says they oppose it 51-44, almost exactly the same. An NPR PBS poll with Maris showed that they opposed impeachment by 49-46. But Fox News says, 54-46. It's fake. Absolutely fake. Just like Chris Wallace. It's unbelievable what's going on at Fox News, with the exception of Tucker. These people and Hannity, they're just out to get President Trump. Even a CNN poll shows that a majority of people are against impeachment. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten at Fox. That's how much Fox hates Trump. They're going to go even more negative than CNN. We'll be right back. Stay with us. One of the articles that came out the last couple of days, Representative Cedric Richmond, a Democrat, was caught watching a golf tournament during impeachment hearings. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten. Yeah, the next thing you're going to find on his computer monitor, if you look over his shoulder, he'll be watching paint drying. There's absolutely nothing here. There's nothing to watch. Even the Democrats are bored to death. You know, I'm not a golf player, and I certainly don't like to watch golf matches. I can't even imagine. I guess maybe if you play golf, you get something out of it. It is so incredibly slow-moving to watch. I remember, as a matter of fact, I was on vacation, flipping through the channels. There's absolutely nothing to watch. And I even complained to my wife about it. I said, look at this. All there is even on ESPN, there's nothing but a golf match. I couldn't get internet where we were. And there was, had some time in the room. I couldn't listen to music. I couldn't watch films. And then you flip around the channels, and even on ESPN, there's a golf match. I said, can you believe how desperately, what's going to be next? Are they going to have curling? It isn't like somebody dusting the ice in front of a rolling ball or something. I mean, and this is what this guy would prefer to watch rather than the impeachment hearings. Absolutely amazing. You know, we look at the false news and the false polls. I mean, how many times are we going to see? And here's the biggest deal, folks. As I've said many times, you understand there's this thing called a push poll. And that's a tactic that was being used by Fox News. You can get the results that you want depending on who you choose to sample. If you want to oversample Democrats, and they know other things too, you know, if they look more at people who've got landlines or whatever, that's going to skew towards a certain demographic, toward a certain type of voter. You play those kind of very subtle games, and then you can print, oh, but it was scientific, it was objective, and I think, no, you played that. They are very, very, very aware of all of those things. Now, anybody who even casually looks at this knows how you can rig a poll. And so they use push polls not to report public opinion, but to push public opinion. And that's what Fox News was doing. You know, they got other polls that have been done. Again, this is a USA Today Suffolk University poll. Shows that President Trump is beating all of the potential circus clowns that are being put up against him from the Democrat Party. They did this last week, right, as the House Democrats were preparing to announce their vote, and they're still playing around with it. You know, it's a show. It's a show. It's a dog and pony show. Today, they've not done the vote yet. They're talking about how they're going to be. They're going to be talking about how they're going to set the rules for the vote, and on and on and on, just dragging this thing out. That's what they're doing today. Well, as they were running through all this stuff, the poll that was done by USA Today, Suffolk poll, Suffolk University poll, December the 10th to the 14th, ending on Saturday, showed that Trump was going to defeat Joe Biden by 3 points, would defeat Sanders by 5 points, Elizabeth Warren by 8 points, Booty Gay by 10 points, and Bloomberg by 9 points. See, it's not working. It's not working. And this is not even playing the game of, you know, how does this match up based on the reality of the Electoral College, because we do not, here's a news flash to you, Hillary Clinton, we do not elect presidents by a popular vote. It matters very much which states they cover. So this poll doesn't even bring, it's even worse for them when you look at that. As a matter of fact, it's so bad that you've had at least two Democrats leave the party. Earlier this week, I was going to report on that on Sunday. By Sunday, it may be worse than that now. I don't know. But as of Sunday, you had two Democrats leave within a 24-hour period. They said, that's it. These people are crazy. I'm out of here. I want to stay in Congress. I don't want to stay in the Democrat Party. A CNN poll even shows a majority against impeachment, with support dropping drastically, even among Democrats. It's fraudulent. It's nonsense. CNN's already been burned pretty bad, pretty badly with this Russian narrative and everything. Fox News, however, is jumping. And Fox News and Chris Wallace are going where CNN fears to tread now because they've been burned so badly on all of this. And, yeah, they are absolutely turning the public against impeachment. And so they're getting desperate. They're trying to actually make up a wire fraud charge to add to this. It will not stop. I think the best summary of all of this actually came from Darth Vader Ginsburg. Ruth herself, no longer a babe. Ruth said, the president is not a lawyer. He's not law trained. Oh, there you go. Now that is insightful, isn't it? I just got finished talking about you don't even need to be law trained. You don't even need to read the Constitution that you swore to understand that if Obama claims, without any basis, if he claims that he and Kerry can get us into the Paris Climate Accord, then therefore, President Trump, you as president now, you are president now, you should be able to just say, we're out and it's done. End of story. But see, we never were in. Nancy Pelosi says, we're in. And again, The president is not a lawyer. He's getting a lot of bad advice from people. He's getting a lot of people who are telling him, you're still a slave. The 13th Amendment doesn't apply. Keep working on that plantation. You can't do anything about DACA. You can't do anything about the Paris Climate Accord. You can't protect the borders. You don't have any division of power. We don't have a separation of power under the Constitution. He's got Jonathan Turley telling him, you got to do what the lawyers say. What are the lawyers going to tell you to do? You got Andrew Napolitano saying, no, he's got to do what Congress says. No, he doesn't have to do what either one of them say. They can impeach him if they want, but he doesn't have to do what we have a separation of power. Like I said yesterday, Madison said, we're going to use ambition to control ambition. We understand human nature is fallen. We understand that men are not angels. That's why we have to have government. But the government itself is not composed of angels. It's composed of men. So how do we control the men? We pit ambition against ambition. We divide power within the federal government, and we divide power from the federal government to the state governments that created it, that are superior to it, that retain the power that they haven't expressly given to it. But these people continue to gaslight President Trump just like they gaslight most Americans. That's what I'm saying. Our real problem is a problem of being propagandized. Our real problem is a problem of education. And it's not just our children who have been gaslighted. We've been gaslighted. We've even got a president who's being gaslighted. He's not a lawyer. We can tell him anything we want. We can tell him the Supreme Court is supreme over everything. And they're getting away with it, unfortunately. And the charade, the circus, continues. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about some technology and privacy issues when we return. Amazing thing that Amazon is doing with Alexa. You will not believe this. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. It's the David Knight Show.
Where the air gets cold, there's a tale about Christmas that you've all been told. And really,
all right, let's talk about Christmas. This is a time of year that people can have various reactions to it, right? A lot of people can get very depressed, perhaps thinking about their childhood that wasn't quite up to the idealistic standards that they see portrayed, or a family that is now gone and no longer around, or you can have just arguments, especially over politics or things like that, right? Just like at Thanksgiving. A lot of different things can happen at this joyous time of year. So Amazon has decided they're going to help you with that. They have added a feature to Alexa to change the subject during Christmas arguments. And I'm going to tell you what they're doing, and then I'm going to give you the very troubling insights behind this. Research by the online retailer found that at around 6:30 p.m. on Christmas Day is a time when family arguments are most likely to break out, reports ukfinance.yahoo.com. So they decide they would step in with a distraction technique, is what they call it, a distraction technique. You use the phrase, Alexa, change the subject. And it will spark a new debate by asking nonsense questions like, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Or what would your superpower be and why? Now, I'm going to tell you the insights that are very disturbing about this. Number one, think about the fact that they have been monitoring you and doing it for a very long time, to the extent that they know that at 6:30 p.m. on Christmas Day, you're likely to have an argument. Does that disturb you? It ought to disturb you. I remember when Uber was under criticism by a journalist because they had so many people that they had not vetted, and so they were having a lot of sexual assaults and so forth. They said, we need to have more vetting of the people who are driving for Uber. And she started doing an investigation, and the guy Travis Kalanick, I think is the way he pronounced his name. I'm not sure. He's not the CEO anymore of Uber. But at the time, he made a direct threat against her. He said, and he was overheard at a dinner by multiple witnesses saying, I'm going to spend millions of dollars and I'm going to investigate you. I want to find out everything about you. Well, they were already investigating people. They had already, she basically revealed, and I captured it on my probe because they shut down the blog. I had to go back to the Wayback Machine to find it. But they revealed that they had been tracking people who were taking drives, and they said, well, you know, they called it their rides of glory. They thought it was kind of funny. They said, you know, we look at somebody's ride, and if somebody takes a late-night ride and they go to somebody else's house and, you know, they stay there for an hour or two and then they take an Uber back to their usual home, we assume that that was some kind of a sexual liaison, some kind of an affair. We'll call that a ride of glory. And they went through and they mapped it out and they looked to see, they did cross tabulation and said, let's see how many of these are happening on a city by city basis. Oh, let's do it this way. Let's see how many times this happens on a holiday by holiday basis. And of course, they can also drill it down to a person of interest, you know, to blackmail you like the Israeli intelligence and Epstein were doing to people. All of these things are possible to them. And so that was what Uber was already doing. I mean, they didn't need to investigate a particular journalist, but boy, they've got the information there that if they want to destroy your life, they certainly can. And so now you've got Amazon with their little Big Brother Snoop system that you pay for. And it's listening to you. And they're sitting there and they're cataloging this as to whether or not they are able to determine whether or not you're arguing. And not only that, but when you're arguing and what you're talking about and so forth. Let me tell you, it goes a lot more granular than what they're talking about here. And this is just a little happy article. Oh, they're going to help you to avoid Christmas arguments. So that's the first thing that is incredibly, incredibly disturbing about this, is that they've been, A, doing it for a while, and B, that they can discern this type of detail about your life. The next thing that is disturbing about this is how they will distract you, their distraction technique. And let me tell you, this is precisely what is being done with social media. It was designed to do this. And it is exactly what is behind the censorship of InfoWars. I pointed out in November 2017 in testimony after they had these tech executives, the Silicon Six or the Silicon Censors, whatever you want to call these people, you know, Apple, Facebook, Twitter, all these people, they all came in and everybody's paying it. Google, you know, they're paying attention to what YouTube and all these people are saying. And then after they leave, the reporters leave. But then after that, you had a military industrial complex guy, a guy who worked for the military, who worked for the intelligence community and so forth, comes in and he says, we have to be careful that we don't have a civil war in America. And the divisions in America are getting very pronounced. And so in order to control this, we have to control speech on the internet. And we have to silence the cannons. That was a phrase he used. We have to silence the cannons on internet. You know, people that don't have our political views have to be silenced. And it was 8 months after that, 9 months after that, that they took off the InfoWars cannon. Because they said it's an information war, we got to silence the cannons. And that's exactly what Amazon is doing here. You know, they think, well, this is about the time that people are going to... So they ask you a question, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? What would your superpower be and why? And that is exactly what they're doing on Facebook. Facebook wants to purge any free press. They want to purge your free speech, your political speech, your analysis about what's going on in Virginia, what's going on with the Trump impeachment. And they just want you talking about, well, what would your superpower be and why? I'll tell you what their superpower is. Their superpower is being able to control the narrative. And that means that they have taken this to another level. It's not just about mass propaganda that they had with a broadcast capability. It's also about measuring feedback. They get feedback. They get to listen to what you're talking about. They get to understand whether or not their fake narrative that they're putting out there is working. And they can fine-tune and adjust that narrative. That is what you can see in this innocent little story about how clever Amazon is and how it's going to make everything so peaceful. Let me tell you something. They don't want to stop the division. They just want to make sure they're the ones who win. That's all they want to make sure of. Along those lines, your modern car is a privacy nightmare. I'm going to tell you what they're grabbing. You think Amazon Alexa is bad? Everywhere you go, they're setting up systems to snoop on you, to spy on you, to control you. And they began by controlling InfoWars. That's why, folks, we are in the fight for our lives. We've got the biggest corporations, the biggest government you've ever seen, the technological advance. The only thing that we have is the truth. That's a very powerful thing. And we still have it, thanks to your support. And if you want to support us, take a look at the products we have. Got a special at InfoWarsStore.com, the 10 days of Christmas. And we're going to have 12 of these, but right now we've got 10 of them. 60% off of real of Alpha Power. That joins 60% off our BrainForce Plus, Knockout, Bod Ease, Ultra 12, BioTrue Selenium, Turbo Force, Ultimate Krill Oil, and even 50% off all apparel. We have free shipping, double Patriot points, and we really do appreciate your support. We'll be right back. I'm going to tell you what your car is collecting about you. Just told you what Alexa is collecting about you. You already know what Facebook is collecting about you. And they're going to be weaponizing that against you within the next 10 years. They expect to have this all fully in place. 2030, that's their deadline. And they're going to make sure that freedom is dead by that deadline. The nature of power. You either have it and your values rule, or you do not have it and you must submit. That's a recent quote. It comes from a retired general, retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant General Stephen L. Quast. This is the guy who made headlines talking about the fact that, hey, we have the technology now, we can transport a human anywhere on Earth within an hour. It's like, whoa, what's going on? So a lot of people are saying, oh, is this the UFO weird stuff we're seeing, you know, out there? Yeah, probably. Man, that's pretty impressive, actually, when we stop and think about it. You know, a satellite in free fall takes 88 minutes to go around the Earth. So to say that you can get somewhere in an hour, I mean, that's, you know, we're not even talking about, we're not even talking about the time it takes to accelerate to that speed, right? Which you have to take, you have to do that gently or you kill people. Maybe they've got that problem solved. Maybe they've got some way to counteract. I don't know. I mean, you know, I was just reading how so many people die at low speed collisions that are T-bone collisions because they're constrained by the seatbelt. And I'm not saying seatbelts are not good. I think in most cases, seatbelts are going to help you more than they harm you. But there are certain circumstances, like any kind of technology, like nothing is 100%. And so there obviously are some particular instances where seatbelts are going to make things worse. And in one particular instance, it is if your body is constrained, but your organs are not, right? Your body's constrained by that seatbelt, you get T-boned, and it just rips your aorta right off at a low speed because your organs continue with inertia and your body is held in place. So, you know, you have different things like that that you've got to think about if you're going to accelerate somebody to get anywhere on Earth within 1 hour. But even more important is the idea that, you know, we are in a, you know, technology is rapidly advancing. You know, Mao said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. Well, that's just one form of technology, isn't it? Firearms. You look at the history of freedom and tyranny, and you find that tyranny exists when power and technology is concentrated in the hands of a few people. Liberty exists when it is widely dispersed. So when everybody is has access to firearms, that is a restraining force on tyrants. But it doesn't have to be a gun. It could be bows and arrows. You know, government is only allowed to have bows and arrows. And we've had that type of, you know, you go back and look at the history of arms control. It began long before we had firearms. It isn't about how many shots you can fire. It isn't about how fast the bullets fly. You know, when these people like McChrystal and others get up and lecture you about the muzzle velocity of a particular round and so forth, that's nonsense. It's simply about having access to weapons and having a rough parity of technology. And so, you know, he looks at this and says, the nature of power, this is what Quast said, which I think is far more important than getting somewhere within an hour. Yeah, there you go, right there. They want to get the BB gun and even the Nerf gun out of the hands of Ralphie, as I talked about yesterday. But the nature of power is you either have it and your values rule, or you do not have it and you must submit. That is the most naked expression of tyranny. And quite frankly, it is, you know, an accurate representation of human nature, but it is not really what we wanted to base our country around. You know, we didn't want to just base our country around the raw exercise of power, but about an understanding of individual liberty and human rights, right? Wasn't that the whole point of the American experiment? We're not there anymore, however. And if you want to understand how this really looks, this article from CNS, 9 of the 20 richest counties are in the D.C. suburbs. Virginia suburbs have more money than even Silicon Valley. Again, I repeat this. The nature of power is you either have it and your values rule, or you do not have it and you must submit. And folks, I'm telling you that all this talk about having campaign finance reform and the corruption in politics and so forth, and it isn't the money that's corrupting it. It's the power that these people have. That's what makes them. They have concentrated so much power in Washington that it doesn't matter what kind of artificial things you come up with to try to constrain that. They have the power. They have the money. 9 of the 20 richest counties in the entire country are where these people in Washington live. And that is a problem not only for the USA, but that's a big problem for Virginia, too. That's one of the reasons why we're seeing what's happening in Virginia. These are the same people whose values rule, and they don't value your freedom. They want to dictate to you. And that's why they've elected Democrats. Virginia is now being ruled by the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and by Norfolk, Virginia, you know, Virginia Beach. People who've come in there to work again for the government. The traditional values of Virginians have been swamped out. I mean, we're not even talking about illegal immigrants. I mean, you take a look at what's going on in New York and New Jersey. They're celebrating in the streets. Illegals in New York City are queuing up for driver's licenses with no fear of deportation. They're giving them driver's licenses, handing that out. Same thing in New Jersey. Illegal aliens are celebrating the fact they can get New Jersey driver's licenses. And, of course, they can take these driver's licenses to probably other places and register to vote. You know, they come to, you know, New York and New Jersey. Here's a driver's license. Now, you know, go somewhere. We've given you ID. It looks like you're an American citizen and so forth. Now you can get to vote in other places, too. You know, point of de-embarkation right there. And but really, folks, it's about the concentration. The concentration of power is what's causing the concentration of corruption and money in Washington. And you're not going to do anything about that by some kind of artificial thing like public financing of campaigns. That's only going to make things worse. And when we talk about what this ultimately looks like, I talked about how the Amazon Alexa knows enough about you to know the exact time they're going to start arguing on Christmas Day with your family. And they know how to distract you. They'll start talking about trivial stuff. What's your favorite superpower? Die Hard, a Christmas movie, and yawn and on, right? It's all about big data. Big data, their model was to put all this in, make everything for free for everybody. Come on in to the ghetto. Then we close the gates and turn on the gas and kill your freedom. And that's exactly what they've done. And it's not just in with Alexa. This is the plan for all of the silicon sensors, for all of the big data. The people were allied with the intelligence community with DARPA. DARPA set them up, as I pointed out. But let's just take a look at what's going on with your car. Washington Post went in and took a look at this, this was reported by some people who said, well, you know, next time you're taking some heat for, you know, your beat-up junker that you're running, your clunker. Remember they did cash for clunker? Why do you think that they did that? Why do you think they wanted to get those old, reliable, analog cars that could be fixed and run forever? It wasn't even just that. It was they wanted to take away those cars that didn't have computers in them and get you to buy cars that had computers in them. And what did they do with those cars with computers in them? Well, the Washington Post went in. They said, we started looking at they picked a 2017 Chevy Volt. They said, among the trove of data points were unique identifiers for my and Doug's, the car's owner's, phones, detailed log of phone calls from the previous week. There was a long list of contacts, right down to the people's addresses, their emails, even photos. In our Chevy, we probably glimpsed just a fraction of what GM knows. We didn't see what was uploaded to GM's computers because we couldn't access the live OnStar cellular connection. And they said it's not just Chevy. They also hacked into Fords that record locations once every few minutes, even when you don't use a navigation system. In German cars, they found 300 gigabyte hard drives. That's as much as five times as much storage you're going to find on a iPhone 11. The Tesla Model 3 can collect video snippets from the car's many cameras. Coming next, face data. And you know how they're going to sell that to you? They're going to say, well, you get in and we recognize your face and we can set the seat position for you and the mirrors. Isn't that going to be great? But what else are they going to do with that? I'm not being paranoid here. You know what's going on with China. You know what's going on with social credits. You know what these people are doing. It's the most troubling. GM wouldn't even share with the car's owner what data they have collected and shared. They have bragged about, however, the fact that they would track the radio music tastes of 90,000 volunteer drivers to look for patterns and where they traveled, because this is about geospatial intelligence, the fastest growing aspect of the surveillance state. Anticipatory intelligence. They told the marketers that the data would help them to persuade a country music fan who normally stops at Tim Hortons to go to McDonald's instead. See? The government has much more sinister uses for it. And they're partnering with the big data people to shut down your freedoms. That's it for today's broadcast. Thanks for listening.